On our tape this month, I want to talk about the No Limits seminar that we recently gave here in Phoenix. I have to say that this was the most unusual seminar that I've ever been a party to in my 25 years of seminar giving and seminar attending. The seminar was priced in such a way as to make it attractive to only the most successful practitioners in the country. And it was done this way for a reason. It was on purpose. Yes, at a lower price, we could have had more people in attendance, but that really wasn't the point, and it wouldn't have been the same. These doctors, as a group, had overcome nearly all of the challenges that stymie the smaller practitioners, and now they were financially very well set. They were no longer struggling to pay bills or set money aside. They were, in fact, as a group, riding a wave of staff-generated patient satisfaction and its resulting demand. You may be wondering what I said at a seminar like this to make it worth paying $2,500 for each doctor to attend. That would be a good question, especially in light of my having released so many recorded programs on so many different topics, and for a lot less than $2,500 per tape set. The answer to this question is simply that I really did not teach the course. I was more of a moderator. The doctors who attended the seminar actually taught the course to each other. And no, they didn't have a script to follow, but that seemed to make it all the better. At this meeting, we presented the entire Zone 5 system. And in short, the Zone 5 system is a strategy that's used to literally trap a doctor and his or her team into facing the various procedural and behavioral blockages that they each bring to the practice. Many of the doctors who attended were already well exercised in the application of the Zone 5 practice development system. Others were there to find out what they'd been doing wrong. My contribution was to lay out the system. The group would then turn and validate the principles that I had just explained. In other words, they would either tell how they had succeeded with a particular principle or how they were stuck at some point and then overcame it. The group would then help coach that doctor who was stuck through their blockage. And I might add that they as a group did a better job coaching the stuck doctor than I could have done because they had just been through the problem themselves recently and now had a personal success story to contribute. I found that my job was presentation or to instruct. The job of the group was to inspire. Some of you have heard me say it before. It's not what you don't know that's holding you back, but what you don't believe. When I was done teaching a concept to the group, the doctor knew more than they had before. But when the group was done with their coaching job, the stuck doctor now believed something that they hadn't believed before. You see, I could instruct, but the group could help the doctor believe. Now you might ask, why is belief so critical to practice growth? The answer is that the doctor who doesn't believe that growth is really possible will behave tentatively. That is, he or she will literally go through the motions of practice expansion without ever really engaging. Let me explain. A doctor who has serious doubts about the potential of his or her practice to sustainably expand, they're going to do fine until they have to hire another staff person or take on another $500,000 of debt in order to have enough capacity to see a few more patients. You realize, of course, that there does come a point where you have to add a staff person in order to grow. Now, you all know that. The problem is when the clinic space you occupy now doesn't have enough additional room for a staff person to stand or sit down and do their work. That's when you have to find a larger clinic space in order to add a staff person in order to sustainably treat even one additional patient more than you have now. I mention this because the tentative doctor will literally spend years looking for the right leased space or land to build their clinic on. They'll run ads for an additional staff person for years without getting around to actually hiring anyone. If you ask this doctor if they know what's holding them back, they're going to say, yeah, I need to hire another staff person. If you ask them if they're going to hire another staff person, they'll say, oh yeah, any time now. It's not until you point out to them that they've been running ads for the past 4 years that they begin to realize that they really are just going through the motions of practice development. They're stuck and they don't even know it. You can't hope to fix a problem if you don't even know you have a problem. At the No Limits meeting, we heard doctors tell how they had woke up one day to realize that they had actually convinced themselves that they were doing everything right in practice management and still not growing. As you recall, this is one of the most common and frustrating consulting encounters that you can have. You've heard us discuss it on previous tapes. A doctor who's convinced themselves that they're doing everything right and have proven to be the exception to the laws of practice building science. You see, when a doctor lacks belief in his or her own growth prospects, it's like slipping the practice transmission into neutral and gunning the engine. There's lots of noise, there's the feeling of imminent motion, but in the end, there's only frustration. So that's my first observation from the No Limits seminar. I think we all learned at that meeting that growth was all about belief. It was all about faith. Some of you might recall the Indiana Jones movie where Indiana Jones is in search of the Holy Grail. He's followed the treasure map leading to the Grail up to the point where he comes to the end of the known trail. He's already gone down the cave where the poison darts and the spike-impaled skeletons and the giant rolling boulders almost crush him. He reaches the edge of the tunnel that looks out over a nearly bottomless ravine. His instructions in the Grail treasure map say that he has to take the leap of faith. He questions this because the jump to the other side of the ravine is more than 30 or 40 yards. In other words, there's no way he can leap to the other side, regardless of the amount of faith that he possesses. As he reads closer, now remember, this is Indiana Jones, hero of the Saturday morning matinee, he thinks to recheck his premise. This is when he determines that there must be some other way to take the leap of faith. Since he's trying to find the Grail in time to save his wounded father, Sean Connery, he's so desperate that he actually steps out into space in hopes of being able to walk on air. Kind of the way the coyote does when he misses the turn in pursuit of the roadrunner. Now he throws some sand out there finally across this void and is able to illustrate to the audience that it's an optical illusion, that there's actually a small catwalk across the ravine to make the walk appear as invisible as James Bond's new Aston Martin. See, no one could have ever found the Grail had they not been willing to literally step out into space, take the air walk, so to speak. As I watched the No Limits seminar proceed, it seemed like the smaller practices were blocked by belief barriers that could have only been overcome by the same type of faith that Indiana Jones possessed when he stepped out into space. Now, I'm going to talk more about that faith and other behavioral growth barriers before we're done on this tape. The next thing I noticed at this most unusual meeting was that everyone in attendance was struggling with only one of two possible conceptual growth blockages. They either had a demand problem or a delivery problem. And it seemed that the smaller practices had demand problems. That is, they couldn't seem to inspire enough direct patient referrals to fill up their clinic. The larger practices seemed to enjoy almost limitless demand. Now they, on the other hand, struggled to deliver a quality experience for the wave of patients that they had inspired to try out their clinics. It was also clear that the demand-challenged clinics had not been able to really connect with their patients, meaning that they just couldn't figure out what patients really wanted from them, or they couldn't figure out how to deliver it to them without threatening their own ideals or practice policies. Another interesting realization for myself, as well as most of the people in attendance, was that once you do give patients what they really want most, the demand for your services is almost frightening. Those of you who have listened to some of our tapes know that what patients want are the five C's: cost, convenience, control, compassion, and comfort. Now, I won't go into these right now. Those belong on another tape and are found on a video that we did. The doctors who were achieving high referral intensity were quickly overwhelmed with new patient demand. Now, yes, some of them had no choice but to consider adding another doctor or a larger building or additional staff. I came to the conclusion that you don't have to wonder when you've got the consumer offering of your practice really dialed in. You'll know because you will actually be overrun with new patients. There was no exception. That was an across-the-board finding of the bigger practices. The next thing that surfaced was that all the practices that were thriving had fully employed the team bonus. The practitioners who were still struggling had not yet solved this problem. They'd come to some point where there was some aspect of the bonus that they just couldn't work out with their staff, and the doctor many times had reverted back to the merit system, you know, where staff can demand a raise every 6 months.